Hello, this is your host, David Starr, and welcome to this edition of the Pluralcast. On today's show, we're talking with Mario Cardinale about agile architecture. He has some very interesting ideas about what it means for a system or solution architecture to be agile, to enable agility. So look forward to that discussion. And before we get to that discussion with Mario, you know what time it is. It's time for Kate Gregory's Visual Studio Kung Fu.
Kate, I understand that you want to talk about commenting code?
Well, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So I see a lot of times where somebody wants to comment out a couple lines of code to see what happens if they're gone, and they're doing it by hand. They're typing slashes or apostrophes if they're VB people. And it's even more embarrassing when they're in XML or HTML because you've got to get the begin and end characters right. And I sort of watch for a minute, and then I'm like, you see these things on the toolbar? And they're like, what things? So I thought we should talk about the toolbar buttons to comment and uncomment your code.
I'm already feeling the shame of the angle bracket for XML commenting. I don't even know what you're going to tell me, and I know I'm wrong already.
So, you know, you can type angle bracket, bang, dash, dash, and, mm-hmm. and blah, blah, blah. But if you just select it and hit the toolbar button, you know, it comments it out.
Okay, so the toolbar button is great. Is there a hotkey for it?
I'm sure there is. I just don't have it memorized.
Okay. And if there isn't, we can bind it, right?
And you can bind your own. Absolutely. What I like about the button is that it looks the same in all the languages, but it does wildly different things.
So this allows me to select a block.
Yes.
In any code file, and it'll put in the contextually appropriate
right.
comment structure, yeah?
Even to the extent that if you select in C++ like half a line, it'll do the slash star star slash.
Oh, wow.
Kind of comments, but if you select the whole line, it'll do the slash slash kind of comment. Yeah.
So whether you're a VB guy like our buddy Rob Wenzer,
yep.
C# dev, XML, or even you from C++.
Yeah, or HTML, and I think SQL also.
Oh, really? In SQL too?
Yeah.
Well, good. That's a good one. Thank you.
Yes, and it's even better for uncommenting, because that's when people get all messed up with the tabs and the spaces. And
oh, yeah.
It'll uncomment, but the other button.
All right, well, going forward, I am going to be a one-keystroke code commenting fool. And that's good news, I think. As we mentioned earlier, Mario Cardinale is our guest this week. Mario happens to be an Application Lifecycle Management MVP, ALM MVP for Microsoft, just like myself, which is kind of cool because that means I get to see him in professional circles occasionally, and he's a good friend. He also happens to be the host of the most popular podcast on Visual Studio in French, the Visual Studio Talk Show. And of course, this means I've never actually heard an episode because a troglodyte like me doesn't speak French. Mario is also the man behind Urban Turtle, an agile work item management tool for Team Foundation Server. It's something I recommend for teams using TFS. It's actually a really good product, and Mario and his team have done a great job. Now, before we get into this interview, I should probably mention that the first 2 or 3 minutes, there's a little mouth breathing going on. I was lucky enough to record this conversation with Mario while I was in Montreal at DevTeach in Montreal, and I think my microphone wasn't placed just perfectly, but it goes away after the first couple of minutes, so don't worry.
So, Mario, you're doing, a pre-con here at DevTeach in Montreal on agile architecture, and I'm really curious what you mean by that.
Well, thanks, David, for having me on your podcast. Well, first of all, it's the recognition that if you're doing agile, you don't do anymore those big design upfront architecture. So you won't have these phases which may last weeks or months, just trying to figure out what is the architecture of the application. This is not the case anymore. So if it's not the case, and if you search the web about architecture and agility, you'll probably discover that lots of people will say the architecture is emergent. It's something that will emerge. The question is, well, how does it emerge?
Right, because it could emerge in a very bad way. In fact, that's what all spaghetti code has done, right?
Yes, so it could evolve as a big ball of mud. And what I promote during that workshop, and I'm writing a book on that, is basically that the best way to emerge your architecture is to tie it closely to your requirement, to your specification. And in agility, you know, the specification is all around discovering the goal of the stakeholder, the goal of the user. One very powerful technique for expressing these requirements are user stories. So, you know, usually during the whole process, from iteration to iteration, you will discover you'll trawl the user story with the stakeholder, you will prioritize them, you'll store those user stories in a backlog, and during that conversation, you will try to confirm exactly what are the expectations of the user. And one good technique for confirming those expectations is to explicitly define the success criteria of the user story. And one way to express user criteria that's been widely defined lately is the given when then template, the Gherkin language. So basically, it's to add to each user story a set of example, a set of scenario. And these given when then, once you have them, this should be the starting point for defining the architecture. Because it's easy to recognize that the given when then provide a ubiquitous language, which, if you look at it, what is exactly a given when then? It's given a set of events, when an action occurs, then another set of events. So if you look at events in action, you could probably organize and structure your architecture around that. So let's talk about action. The first thing that we could put in place in the architecture that will simplify, because the overall goal of all these architecture, these emergent architecture, is to simplify the problem. So how do we simplify the problem if we just focus on when an action occurs? Is to first recognize that there's two categories of actions. It's either queries, so action that do not change the internal state of your system, or command. So these commands are going to change the internal state of the system, and these commands are the ones who are generating events. So basically, now if you have queries, so you will segregate your system, say having queries on one side and command on the other side. This is a pattern which, again, has been widely documented. It's people call that CQRS. Command and query responsibility segregation. So by first segregating between queries and command, you will be able to go back at your given when then and first discover this example, this scenario. Is it a queries or a command? So if it's a queries, you'll still have given a set of event. When a queries occur, then it's going to be a response. It's the response of the query.
Okay.
If it's a command, as I said, given a set of event, when a command, then it's another set of event. So you will be able to almost, at the specification, at the early, once you start a sprint, once you start an iteration, and you have this example, you'll be able, as an architect, to define what is the contract of the action, the command, or the queries, and what are the contracts of the events, and just add that to your architecture. This is how your architecture is going to emerge, to evolve from iteration to iteration. And having done this specification, and again, I will suggest not writing a document, but just write the code. So what is this event? So just write as code the definition of the class that represents event. Do the same with your command. Do the same with your queries. And basically, how you have the structure upon which the architecture is going to be built on. And from these specifications, this is good enough for the team to complete the example during the sprint, during the iteration.
So does that not presume that you have an existing system in place, right? You talk about commands mm-hmm. and queries. They're two separate things. I can now look at a given example scenario.
of given when then, and I can decide that's a query or that's a command. Okay, so I make that decision. And architecture, though, is it's more than that, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot more to how do I design my system than just command query separation.
Well, what you'll discover rapidly is that if you're using a command and query responsibility segregation and you add to that event sourcing, that's also the name of this pattern for an handling event, that instead of building everything from scratch, from iteration to iteration, you could probably sit everything on top of a small framework for doing that, and there's already open source framework available. So just like if you want to do continuous integration, that means that you need to put in place, you know, a server so that you can have those build run continuously every time you check in software. That means that either on a iteration zero or at some point at the beginning of your project or when you decide that you want to adopt this architecture principle, you will need to put in place a small framework for doing this segregation between command and query. But this is not huge work. This is something that could be done easily within a sprint, within an iteration.
Sure, because we have some base query interface, some base command interface. We have those in two separate namespaces, and we build out from there. Is that sort of thing?
Basically, you'll create all these base classes, and out of these classes, you will create the concrete implementation, which, again, are going to be the simple implementation just to express what are the contract of the interface, the visible interface. But as an architect, you don't want to do the full implementation. You just want to define the contract. You'll probably, you know, activate your given when then test so that at least it runs with a minimal implementation, and that's it. This ends up the specification stages. Now it's the time for the rest of the team to implement the real behavior of a command or the real behavior of a story, of a query.
So when I think about this, I'm thinking particularly about building a website, say, with ASP.MVC. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to have a lot of pieces of my system in there that you've not yet addressed, things closer to the top of the skin.
Everything related with user interface. I'm skipping that with this specification because the given when then talk directly to the domain layer. So again, the goal is to do specification at this stage. So I'm going to express what are the visible interface in my domain by defining what are the commands, what are the query, what are the events. So what's new related with this simple example, the one that I'm handling at this time. So again, it's something that you do iteratively, example by example during iteration. So I'm adding this new visible interface to my existing base code, but I'm not building the whole solution. So I still need to create the visible the UI. But the beauty is that once you've finished the specification, the first thing probably the team will do is to create a high-fidelity prototype with the UI using your minimal implementation so that rapidly they could create a minimal prototype of the UI, go back to the stakeholder and validate, you know, continue the conversation with them and confirm that this UI is really what they are expecting. And lots of time you'll discover that through this, you know, UI prototyping that, oh, you need to change back the example. It's not exactly what they were expecting. And you need to go back to the specification. But the overall goal is to waste as minimal work so that you get this conversation and this feedback loop with your customer, with your stakeholder. So again, prototyping, you're using, as a first step is a good way to ensure that you don't build the whole, because if you discover through the conversation with the customer that now that they find out this UI prototype, that it's exactly not what they want, it's probably possible that, you know, if in synchronization with the product owner, that you may decide that for this sprint, we won't produce more than that because that's good enough for the review. We'll get the feedback in the review and discover that we need to maybe create a new story and don't implement the full story so that you won't need to build the back end for that because the prototype will be good enough for having this conversation. So my vision of agility is ensure that you have these feedback loops with your stakeholder at the minimal cost. which is a little bit different than a lot of people will say. They will say, oh, if you do agility, you need to deliver working software ready for production. I'm not a big fan of that. I'm more a big fan of building the minimal code so that you have the good conversation with your stakeholder at the minimal cost, because your overall goal is to waste as minimum for code that at the end will be scratched or thrown in a garbage can because the customer just discovered through the journey that we're all in the journey discovering what they really want, and because there's a very high uncertainty regarding regarding what we need to build, you shouldn't spend so much building it first. Try to minimize the cost. And again, this architecture framework, you know, CQRS with event, and the fact that we can easily prototype, you know, build a rich UI prototype out of that, it's a good way not to spend so much dollar. And the good news is, more often than not, customer will just say, yes, this is exactly what I want as a UI. And now you could proceed and finish the story as it was committed by the team during the iteration.
One of the things I'm curious about is being able to make a very clear statement about some terms.
Yeah.
So agile architecture, as I've heard you describe it, would be allowing my system to change as new requirements come in. And you've laid in a base framework here. You mentioned specifically CQRS.
If I try to explain my vision of an agile architecture, I would say it's two things. First of all, the architecture is to ensure that the user experience, and in terms of user experience, I mean more usability. I'm not on the UI side, but user experience in the sense that the full experience of the user, of the stakeholder who are going to use the system, is high. It's delightful. So that means that you need to make sure that the good requirements, so that you build the right software, but also that all these architecture requirement, you know, those non-functional requirement are handling correctly. And this isn't something that I didn't cover, but, you know, I would strongly suggest that these non-functional requirement are expressed as user story. So instead of being goal, they are more like constraint. But that's the first job of the architect. The second job is to ensure that you build the system at the minimal cost, or to ensure that we have the simple solution to fulfill the needs. So, and this is where having a framework where we recognize that events are an important part of this event, that command is another important part, and queries, and that these three are the base visible interface of my system, because I can easily tie them to my given when then scenario. This is where I think we can optimize the system so that it's going to be the simplest system to fulfill the given when then scenario, which are exactly the requirement from the user.
So I've heard, well, first of all, to put some context around this, when you were talking about working within an iteration, that's a form of how agile teams work. They work iteratively, incrementally, right? And so one of the things about that you'll often hear is teams talking about definition of done. And you said that you like to take your ILITs, things like scalability, uptime, all that good stuff. So you take your ILITs and you represent them with some component of work in the backlog. I've heard other teams propose that those things are part and parcel of my definition of done, right? That's what it means to complete any features that they conform.
So I would say they end up being in your definition of done if you cannot automate the validation or the verification of them. But they always start in your backlog, because you must make sure that they are highly visible to your stakeholder, and that even the stakeholder prioritize them and decide that these ILITs are going to be handled during a sprint. The main difference between a user requirement and an ILITs or a constraint is that once you commit doing it in a sprint, that means that you need to add it to your definition of done, because each other sprint, you still need to revalidate that this constraint is always valid. So this is why I call them constraint, and I don't even want to call them user story. I will call them more like constraint story. So the goal is to to define clearly what are these architecture constraints, but I want to handle them in my backlog. That's why I'm still using the as I want to. So in this case, I will clearly identify who's the role member who wants that, what is the goal or the constraint, and what are the benefits, so that my stakeholder can prioritize them. But I'll make it clear at some point those are constraints, so that once we commit doing it, that means all along the road we will have to revalidate. And lots of them, we won't be able to automate them because this is too costly. So that means that the team must be aware that if we commit doing this at this sprint, we need to every other sprint, or maybe it will define, you know, we'll make it highly visible that, okay, this is not each sprint that I'm going to revalidate that. That will be every 3 months, every 6 months. So that, for example, if I have load testing, so I'm making sure that I'm having a certain response time, availability. Do I want to do that every sprint?
Yes.
Yes or maybe not. Maybe we may decide, you know what, because we really release our software not at the same rate than our sprint, we release every 3 sprints. So before releasing, this is going to be part of this definition of done. So again, depending of your organization, depending of your, if you're releasing each iteration, probably you'll say, well, we need to do that. But you need to be aware how costly it is going to be, because, you know, doing all those load testing on and on and on. But still, at least you have the good conversation with your stakeholder, because once you commit, they will understand what it means. So that some resources will be needed on and on for doing that. Otherwise, you know, my strategy is not to hide that from my stakeholders, saying, oh, those are technicalities. No, those are important features because they help the user experience being high or being a quality user experience. And some people will say those are quality attributes that if they're not there, the system is not really usable. So this is one big part of the architecture, is making sure that these quality attributes are addressed correctly. And as I said, the other part is making sure that we have a framework in place so that we simplify the solution, and a framework which makes lots of sense because we can tie it to your given when-then scenario is the CQRS and the event sourcing.
Okay. Well, you also talk about emergent architecture. Is mm-hmm. it possible, though, that what I'm going to emerge to is something that we don't define as a CQRS system?
Yes, it's possible, because sometimes, you know, some system you may find out rapidly that, you know, you don't handle command and you don't handle query. You always respond to event, so it's an event-based system. So in this case, this is not the appropriate architecture. My point is just that probably for more than 80% of the system that we build, very simple system, you know, CRUD-based, up to much very complex system, but only 80% of them, CQRS and event sourcing will be good enough. So that's why I'm promoting that.
Okay.
But you must be aware that one size doesn't fit all. And if you have something which is more event-based system, another framework should be put in place. But still, you'll have these events. It's just that in this case, you'll have given a set of events. When, in this case, it's not when an action occurs, it's when an event occurs. So if you recognize that those are events that occur during the when state, basically, it means you should have an event-based architecture system. So when an event occurs, then another set of events should be published.
All right. One of the things that you talked about is testing with wiring up my test to talk directly to those events and queries.
Mm-hmm. So directly to the domain. Bypass your UI.
Right. Okay.
So don't write your given when them with UI in mind, because it means that you're not doing specification, you're not defining the what, you're defining the how.
So Martin Fowler talks about that form of testing as subcutaneous testing. Right, testing just below the skin.
Yeah.
We're gonna not be testing in an MVC application against, say, a controller.
Yeah.
The subcutaneous thing would be to test against a controller. A little bit deeper level down, we get to our command queries. But if what I'm testing against is just the domain, it feels like I'm leaving out this entire stack above that, which is the, I don't know, model binding and
so this is
all
why
that stuff.
This is why, you know, I've told you that I'm writing a book, and the title of the book is Agile Specification. the goal here is to specify, so they define the what. But now, how we are going to implement, not to define the how. So it means that having this and having this set of automated tests, you know, once you can, you know, rerun on a daily basis, your given when then scenario, doesn't mean that there's still no more job for tester, because there's still job for tester for making sure that you automate also the UI testing. You could decide in your organization that you'll still do manual testing, or you could decide that you want to automate your UI testing using the given when then framework. Could make sense, but those are not specification. Those are tests that you build during the iteration, then that tester build, but this should interfere with your architecture, because your focus on architecture was to define the structure for your domain. Obviously, you may state, oh, we're going to use an MVP or MVC, you know, make sure that you have a good architecture for the UI. But once you define that, and you may have defined it, enforced that in your definition of done, that's it. You don't need more job on that side. This is more a tester who are just going to validate that the logic, the UI logic, which is going to be in your presenter or your if you're using MVVM, so whatever, where is your controller? So this UI logic makes sense, and that you try, and that there's tests for it.
Okay.
And again, I would argue that if you do that, and if your stakeholder, the real value, if you add these tests, if they could also be reused for acceptance testing. Because they test the UI, and for, you know, lots of users, the UI is the real, is what is the system. So if the real value, if you can convince that the organization that we're going to spend money building all these tests that test the UI, but we're going to reuse them as our acceptance testing criteria.
Well, sure. The other thing is, you know, I'm kind of struggling with what comes first, the chicken or egg here, because if I'm thinking about my user experience, let's just look at a page with a data grid on it, right? The query that produces results for that thing will be driven by the requirements of the UI itself, no?
Well, not exactly. You will have a scenario that says, given blah, 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 a set of events, when, for example, and the user will probably tell you, when I want to see the list of command.
Okay.
And you will probably even want to mock up a UI, because that's the way they see this, that's the way they make things concrete. So they will
right.
say, you know, I have this list of command on this screen, and our goal is to make sure that we don't express the given when then using the UI paradigm. So we'll just say, when I have a list of command, then I should, you know, or when I ask for a list of command, then I should receive a list of command which has this parameter, you know, a name, and I could even make it more concrete, saying, given that I have this three event, so I know what is should be the result. So I will receive a list with two items, and each column is going to be this value, this value, this value. This is the way I'm going to define the given, not the given, the then. And this way, I can really, at the domain level, validate that I'm that my query is receiving as an object model, as a data transfer object, exactly the data that I'm expecting.
So would you expect to see, let's stick with this example, it works really well. On my when, or rather, on my then clause mm-hmm. for a data grid view, I would see, I get the first name and I have a subclause, yeah. and the last name, and yeah. the phone number, and the email address. I see those in the requirement?
I'm not sure if it's going to be and, so that it's different than. It may just be that then I will receive, and the whole sentences is going, probably what I will just say is, I will receive a command. And maybe the easiest way, if I use the Gherkin language, is to define a table so that I will place in the table for each column what are the expected value. And this is where Gherkin language it can be quite powerful, because it could simplify those given when then using the table as a mechanism to express a row of data.
All right. That makes sense. So if I'm going to sit down and begin working on a system, let's say I'm in a greenfield world, mm-hmm. and it's, as you called it iteration zero, yeah. I'd call it sprint one, but whatever.
That's fine.
So we start with our...
Recognize that there's some staging phases.
So we sit down and we're going to implement this address book web page we were just talking about. Is the first thing I do to start building software at the command and query level as opposed to going out and build new MVC project?
Visual Studio implied that if you create a solution and you had project. So that means that early on you need to decide what are the type of project. Those are quality attribute or non-functional requirement that you need to decide very early. So you'll have to decide, is it an MVC? Are we going to build an MVC ASP.NET application?
Well, let's just say we've decided
so all that. So that means that at some point you make this decision. So once you have the project, the first thing that you will want to do is to split at least in the three base layer. Like, what is my UI? What is my domain? What are the data layer?
So I minimally have three projects inside my solution.
This is a well-known pattern that makes sense. It's a good way to simplify your solution and to make it easy to evolve. So this is probably something also as an architect that you'll do first is to say, oh, let's make sure that we split the organization of the application around this three layer. And also it's mainly because you want to focus later on the domain. This is the one that you're going to split in query and command.
Okay, so I'm with you so far. I want to take this one more step further and ask if I can implement the specification that you've given me, the given when then thing for that screen. I implement that through my query, it works, the unit tests all pass, or whatever style of testing that is. Is that deliverable? Is that doneness to you? Or do I still have to go back in and plumb
it? It's done at the specification level.
It is.
So that means that you may be like on day three of the iteration. So now the specification is done. But you know that during this iteration, during this sprint, you want to build the full story. And it's done only for this example. And there may be 5, 6, 7, or 50 examples that complete the whole user story. So this is why I'm saying it's emergent and you're doing step by step, example by example, and you finish the specification. And as I said, the next step should be by your team is to create a mock, a UI prototype. So using MVC now, just focus on the UI, making sure that the user feel comfortable before implementing the art of the command. You know, the full behavior of the command, and also before even implementing, because at this point you'll probably just store in memory. The minimal implementation is I store my event in memory. My minimal implementation of command is just to store the event directly without no behavior. The minimal implementation of my query is to read the event and transfer the event in a DTO, a data transfer object that I'm going to send back. So this is my minimal implementation that I've done as a specification. The beauty is that we can reuse that to validate the UI. So without having to add more code, the code that we will focus on is building the UI.
Help me understand this, because I wrote a specification that executes against a query in our mm-hmm. case, and now I want to use that same validation language to validate that the UI is behaving properly.
So the UI at some point should call the command or should call the query. There's no reason why if you build this UI and never use your query or your command, there's a disconnection there.
Agreed.
So, and again, it's going to help you build an inductive UI. And what I mean by that is a UI which is going to really base on implementing inside the UI real behavior. And so the anti-pattern of that is implementing UI with state where you say this, we are in this state. We don't want that. We really want to have button which says, let's say I have a command which is publish a bug. There should be some place a button where I say I want to publish a blog. And this publish blog button will call the publish command in my domain layer. And again, The question is, my scenario says, given there is those events, so I want to set the event in my event store. So I'm going to have a fake event store in memory implementation that I'm going just to you know fill in the event so mm-hmm. that I know that my fake store is at the appropriate state.
Yes.
So that my given is done. I know that in my UI I want now to create this publish this blog. So my UI, you know, let's say that there's a query. The query will read the event, generate the appropriate DTO, fill in the UI, and at some point I press the publish. So it's going to call the publish command. And usually my test or my den is just to validate that the blog publish as event has been sent to the store. So the strategy is to make sure that your store is it's something that you pass to your command facade in the constructor, so that you can, if you were doing any dependency injection, you will inject the store. In this case, I'll just make it explicit, it's in my constructor. So I could construct my fake, pass it to my command facade. The command facade will reuse my fake. At some point, the behavior will add the appropriate event, and my den will just validate that in my fake event store that there is this new event added, because that's basically what I want to validate. So in this case of the UI, obviously, basically, I won't assert that the event has been added. Usually in the UI, I will just verify in my prototype that once I've created a command, that the appropriate screen is displayed to your user. That's usually what the user wants to see. And this is what I'm going to validate. And now we're not anymore in the specification phases. We're in the implementation phases. But as I said, that should be the first step of the team to build that as a validation or as a verification mechanism with your stakeholder that you're building the right system before going further on.
Mario, thank you so much for explaining this stuff. This is really cool.
Well, that's my pleasure. And, you know, in a couple of months or maybe, you never know, a book always takes longer than you expect to write.
That's true.
But one day there will be an Agile specification book, and all this stuff is going to be in this book. And I hope that I'll make it simple enough so that people will easily grab how to do this type of...
Well, and there's a lot more information and detail to talk about than just what we've covered here, for sure.
For sure, and there's nothing better than seeing real code so that you could really understand with real system how it works.
Oh, what a great discussion that was. Thanks so much to Mario for being on the show. And, of course, thanks as always goes to our musical contributors, Patrick Lee at patricklemusic.com and the Judies at wastedtalentrecords.com. Now, a lot of people ask me about the Judies music, and I'll just tell you that this is a sort of new wave band that was popular when I was in high school down in Southeast Texas, a little regional band. And they just gave me permission to use some of their old tracks, which I did, by the way, get on vinyl on the show. And this has been your host, David Starr, and I look forward to seeing you in class sometime soon.
This is the modern world. Let's pour more concrete. No protest is best. Don't be a hero.